Greetings, urban farmers, gardeners, and healthy food visionaries. Farmer Greg here, and welcome to the 813th episode of the Urban Farm Podcast, where every day we work together to educate and inspire you to become part of your food revolution. Welcome, welcome, everybody. Greg Peterson from Urban Farm U and Goodness Grows Organics. And I am here with Zach Wyatt tonight. Zach grew up in Northern Virginia. His family were caretakers of a 300-acre-old dairy farm where they had a large garden, pigs, horses, chickens, and when he was young, he worked on neighboring farms. After graduating from Coastal Carolina University in 2003 with a degree in business administration, he worked in home mortgage lending and IT. But Zach's passion for bringing community together over food won out, and his understanding of the importance of equitable food access and his drive to improve local food systems led him to create the Carolina Farm Trust in 2015. As the CEO of Carolina Farm Trust, Zach has produced two documentaries, The Farmer That Feeds Us series, and an annual music festival fundraiser called Carolina Jubilee. Welcome, Zach.
Thanks, Greg. I appreciate it. All that sounds, it's weird to hear, but
it's what you've done.
But yeah, no, yeah, I appreciate you having me. Very excited to be here.
Absolutely. When your team emailed me, we haven't had somebody talking about farm trusts yet in 800 plus episodes. So it's, oh man, we got to have you. So let's just start with the basic. What is a farm trust?
Well, we're not a typical land trust, but land trusts in general are really in the modern era buying up easements on large pieces of property, really just to protect it from development. And all that really means is they're buying the development rights on it. So land trusts used to buy lots of land, but then it takes a lot of money to take care of it. So you'll see just easements are really what land trusts hold those easements. And that way, when the properties get sold from owner to owner, they manage what that easement is look like. And basically, and it can be very specific. It can say you can only build a barn in this area, or you can only build this much infrastructure on your farm. Or so it just depends on what the owner wants to do. But that's usually how a land trust easement stuff works.
So when you say buy the development rights, you're basically buying a piece of the In planning, I have two planning degrees, the bundle of sticks of rights that come with that property. You're buying the sticks that say basically what you can build on that property or what you can't. And it's a legal document.
Correct.
All right. Cool.
We're a very young organization. We're 9 years old. And really what we're mainly focused on is building a regional food economy and a regional food system. And really the vision is building regional resilience and using food and agriculture as the primary driver. I know you know this, and I'm sure a lot of your listeners know that food and ag run the whole world, but most people would never enter their brain. So we're really trying to build a replicable regional model that we can replicate not only nationally, but globally. So
nice.
Really using the Carolina region as a template. And the problem with food systems is it's a system. You can't do just half of it. You got to do the whole thing. So the four impact areas we're really trying to have is health and nutrition, upward mobility and equity, sustainability and climate change. And then our four on the ground action pillars is one is building that urban farm network. How do we get generations and generations of folks that just have no clue where their food comes from? Why is it important? We need urban density to take more responsibility of where their food comes from. Mm-hmm. And as far as farm preservation or farmers in general or food in general, if you don't understand how it's grown, or then how are you supposed to respect it? So it's not a slight on the urban-rural divide is enormous. And what urban farms do is they set the stage, because really the ultimate thing we're trying to accomplish is behavioral change. All of you know how hard that is. And people are not going to watch Food Inc. 2, Common Ground, go to a conference. Very small percentage are going to be able to go do that and say, okay, I'm changing the way I do things. Because one, we don't even live in a system where you really can at scale. So we found it very interesting where these urban farms have that experience and people. And it's so fascinating because whether you've never touched a farm, have no idea about agriculture, it's still magical to people. Even if you have the biggest naysayer, they might drive by 10 times, it might be 1,000 times, but one day they're going to stop and say, what's going on? So that's where our urban farm pillar is. Our second pillar is a farm apprentice program. We're trying to create tracks back into agriculture. I'm sure many of you know, all of our farmers are aging out. You know, so we want to bring in apprentices, not only labor force for us, but how do we make sure every community garden, every school garden thrives? How do we create traveling teams to support our rural farming community with projects? Greg, farmers don't get PTO. And so our third pillar is our Food is Health program. So we're designing that right now. We actually have someone joining us in June full-time to start really executing that. And really it's putting community health workers covering a geographic location, really building intimate relationships with community on the ground organizations. But how do we design systems? And just because food is healthy doesn't mean it's not good or it's not fun. And I think if we talk about food as medicine, we're completely missing the boat. We really need to be focusing on prevention and making that connection to the broader public. And then our fourth main driving pillar is our distribution platform that we're building out. So we have 25,000 square foot of a distribution facility that we're building out in West Charlotte, right off Freedom 85, which is a really cool interchange and location for us. And so it consists of a 3,000 square foot commercial kitchen, about another 4,000 square, well, about 8,000 square feet of our wholesale operation. That is all in phase one, which today was a huge day. We finally got permanent power. So I had to thank all my Duke Energy friends for finally making that happen. And then phase two of that project is going to consist of a retail market, a teaching kitchen, event space, and a meat processing facility. So we will really truly be able to really create a really independent food system that's regionally focused. So really early on with starting Carolina Farm Trust, we were just doing fundraisers for small farms with small pieces of equipment. But it didn't take me long. Farmers really don't want a handout. They want to make money and they need a market. They just don't have one. I love farmers markets. Most farmers hate farmers. it's a be in there week in and week out. So we wanted to create a profitable revenue stream for our farming community. Then how can we use economics to really push them to start their regenerative farming journey, which is absolutely critical to nutrition density and health, and then also with climate change. And then how do we create a supply chain that works for all of us? It's got to work with every single person up and down the socioeconomic ladder. We got to be able to work with restaurants. We got to work with major institutions. Did institutions get us where we are today? Absolutely. Yeah. Do we need them tomorrow to change the system? Absolutely. So we've been having some amazing conversations with Compass Group, who's actually located here in Charlotte. They're the largest food service company in the whole world. We had their quality assurance folks over last week, and they're all in. The Kimpton Hotel in Uptown Charlotte, we have $1 million revenue commitment this year. So these are real numbers that are unprecedented to infuse in the Carolina region.
Yeah, and that $1 million commitment is what, to buy food through your
mm-hmm.
system?
Mm-hmm.
Awesome. So basically what I hear you saying is you're helping farmers figure out regenerative agriculture.
Yep.
Getting them trained. Maybe you're doing training on how to actually grow and harvest the stuff and the food. And then you have a funnel for them to sell it locally.
Yeah. So we're on the very early phases of all of this. We partner up with a company called Soil Regen. Russell Hedrick is a farmer out of Hickory, and his partner Liz Haynes in Texas. But Russell's been farming regeneratively since he started his farm about 10 years ago. He's an amazing human and has basically created his own commodity market. And his farm is just amazing. And we do a systems change conference in Statesville in the fall. So we're just getting this apparatus up and running. And so we'll be partnering with them to really do a lot of that education.
I need to send you over. I've been doing a lecture for about the past 15 years called The Local Food Economy.
Yeah.
And there's seven parts to a local food economy, and mm-hmm. it starts with the farmer and education and growing local food and local seeds and value-added products mm-hmm. and culture, and there's one more, but it's all inclusive of all that. And basically what I've been sharing is that this is what we need. We need local food systems to deliver local food, and that's what you're doing.
Yeah, we've been supporting Mecklenburg County's senior nutrition program over the last year and a half, but that we've been buying produce, getting it right into the seniors. And CenterWell, Contegra, Archwell Health have all come on board with that. So they're buying produce from us, we're delivering it to them, and they're distributing it to their population. There's another nonprofit in town called Heal Charlotte, which focuses on transitional housing. They just took over a 150-room hotel over off of Sugar Creek and 85, which is in the north part of
Nice.
Charlotte in a
Yeah.
very kind of rough area and very food insecure. So we're putting a mini bodega, a CFT market, right on the ground floor. And they're actually having their ground breaking tomorrow. The biggest
On
thing,
the
Greg,
ground
none
floor of the hotel
hotel.
that Oh, nice.
We're waiting on paperwork to accept EBT and SNAP at that location. And so what we're really trying to do is really create capitalism is not a bad word.
Not
We don't live in a capitalistic society anymore. We really live in a corporate socialist society.
Yeah.
And capitalism also does not mean that we have to take the human capital and our natural environment out of the equation. So we are a nonprofit. We will always stay a nonprofit. But that doesn't mean that we can't make a lot of money. We want to make a lot of money. The only difference is at the end of the year, we reinvest that money back into our mission. It doesn't go anywhere else. So we can take the margin that we're making with Compass Group and other affluent folks that we might be able to deliver and work with, and then creating different pricing tiers for our marginalized community or our vulnerable community, our nonprofit partners. We should be getting the best food on earth to our food banks, not the worst. But it's just
Yes.
creating the engine.
What people don't get about nonprofits is if you're a nonprofit and you're not making money, you're going to go out of business.
Correct.
So if you have a business, any business, if you're not making some kind of extra, you're gone. And
Well,
that's.
it's crazy. We were talking to a funder the other day, and they're like, "We just don't understand. Like, you're a nonprofit. Why are you having an earned revenue model?" I'm like, "Do you want us asking for millions of dollars every year? No. Are you going to give us $1 million every year? No. We need an earned revenue model.
Yeah.
We need a capitalism to help solve this ever-growing social capital need. We can't continue the government, philanthropy, corporates were never designed to solve these major problems. The problems just keep getting bigger, and we just try to shove band-aids on all this when we really need to focus on kind of some system-wide solutions.
I've been doing a lot of research in the health aspects of the food that's being produced in this country and the world, and there's a lot of problems with it too that we need to address as well.
Yeah, a lot of the documentaries that come out I get frustrated with, but we did a screening of Food Inc. 2 a few weeks ago and did a panel afterwards. And I was actually very impressed. It basically was an hour and a half infomercial on why our model needs to be executed, but they were very balanced with it. And I get it, it is. Our food system is killing us. And I know that sounds like a very bold statement or maybe too much, but it's not. We have Bayer, who through all of the subsidiaries are making us sick on one arm of their conglomerate
Yeah.
and then treating it on the other arm. The ultra processed food, and one of the alarming things that the Food Inc. 2 was talking about, 58% of our daily diet is ultra processed. And that's insane.
That's insane. I just found an app for my phone called Yuka, Yuka, and it scans the code of the product you're about ready to buy and tells you what's in it. It explains in layman's terms what's in it and whether you should eat it or not. And it's on a scale of 1 to 100.
Back to like we're your value-added product line. That's where we're going to really be hustling with our commercial kitchen and developing our culinary program. And not only value-added products for us, but we want to be able to white label things for our farming community and then give them back to them to sell, because that's where all
Yeah.
the margin is. We can take probably $20 of beans and tomatoes and turn it into something that they can make $100 off of. So we're really excited about our commercial kitchen, all the
Huge.
different revenue opportunities that it can
Yeah.
have, not only for us, but for other people.
Yeah, exactly. So I have to know something. It takes a lot of thought and energy to do what you're doing. Before I left Phoenix, I looked at actually putting the property that I lived on for 32 years into a farmland trust. And it was a 5 to 8 year process. And ultimately, that didn't happen, but the people that bought it are amazing. What inspired you to do this? Because it's not an easy process.
No, a lot of happy accidents. I grew up on a farm, yes, Did we dabble in it? Yes, it was just for self-production. We never farmed for money or anything like that. But just growing around land, understanding that circle of life, obviously I didn't appreciate it at the time. I was born in West Texas, and so I got shipped out to West Texas every summer. And then my grandparents lived in Midland, Odessa area, but my great-grandfather had a ranch in San Angelo, big ranch to us, small ranch in Texas. But I've been around land. When you can walk out and no one can hear you, you can go into the woods and all the fields. There's just something about it that is just so unique. But it was also just in the market crash, obviously in 08, took a huge financial hit, obviously trying to rebuild from there. I had a partnership in this IT business that kind of fell apart. And so at the time, it was just really soul searching. And that's a nice way to put it. And my wife was listening to Scott Avett doing a public service announcement around Lomax Farm, which is a community farm over in the Cabarrus County area. And it just struck something. I don't know what it did. And so I really just out of just keeping my mind busy and not going crazy, just try looking at food systems. And once you start reading about food systems, it's horrifying. I reached out to a few farmers and talked to them. It was even more horrifying. And so it was literally from a metaphor, so to speak, of just seeing a Manhattan-sized meteor coming every day. And I, looking back on it, I didn't even really realize it at the time, but I was reaching. That was the only thing I could do in my life at that point was doing something, working with this Big Oak Farm on some land acquisition, which it never happened, but it made us form the organization. They, Mike and Don Smith, has helped me way more than I've ever helped them. But it just started this little snowball down the hill. We've 1,000 coffees, meeting people, and it just slowly grew. And the obviously the pandemic was a blessing and a curse from obviously from all the tragedy that it brought. The blessing it brought was the moment the world stopped, I sent all of our funders, our corporate partners, our county government, here's what's going to happen. And they are like, go away. And it all did happen. I think the visualization of seeing produce being just, leveled right back into the soil, the shelves being bare, that scared. It's scary because it's an illusion. The grocery store is a magical illusion because it's an illusion of abundance. Most people don't understand average day turn on a grocery store is 3 days. And that's in normal times. If the it's if there's a storm, snow, boom. Now we got a couple 3 hours.
3 hours.
So it's still the American Rescue Plan Act couldn't have happened at a better time. We got our distribution facility. We've had a lot of things had to fall in place. I can't say enough about our county government and the leadership that they've played. So we were able to secure about $12 million in 2022 to launch all of this. Beforehand, it was just 12,000. Our first year, I think, turned into 24, and then 24 turned into 50 the following. But that was just a big jump. And so people are starting to understand, but it's also trying to speak different languages, and I'm trying to prove to the Bank of Americas of the world how we farm our food has direct correlation in your sustainability reports you have to file with the SEC. Compass Group owns the Bank of America contract. Compass has to do all their Scope 3 requirements. So it's getting the pressure keeps increasing because the stakes keep getting bigger. But it's really cool to see different people at the table. Compass Group on its own could trade could change our global food system if we can give them a model that they're like, okay, this is working, and now let's replicate it.
So in doing the work that we do, as I'm interacting with people all the time, things happen along the way. And some of them are like, hold on here, time out. That just happened. And it was an epic. Do you have one of those epics that told you when it happened that, oh my gosh, this is the reason I'm doing what I'm doing?
I think there was a lot of little ones for sure. When in 20 end of 2017, Aaron Barbie, who's on our board now, was working for the Aldersgate Retirement Community. And I don't know where she found my info, but she was like, hey, you want to have lunch? She goes, hey, I got 6 acres. We're not doing anything. Will you turn it into an urban farm? And I was like, oh, yes. And then 30 seconds later, as the conversation continues, the all of the doubts and everything else starts to overcome all over my body because I have no resources. I have no real way to do this. And
Hold on, like when I was talking to somebody about elderberries and she said, I'm getting my elderberries from Europe. And I said, what? Hold on, I can grow elderberries. And then 10 seconds later, it's what do I do now? So I
it's a
understand that.
Yeah, so I would say that was the catalyst because we got a little news coverage on it, and then that turned in. Trane Technologies is they're located in Davidson. They're the largest HVAC company in the world, and they take sustainability very seriously. And that relationship has really grown. But it was getting the urban farm at Aldersgate and just refusing to say no, just give up or take no for an answer and things like that. That allowed us to lease another 11 acres in Union County. We were able to get Bernard Singleton on to the that we knew in West Charlotte, and he's still there. That ownership changed a little bit, but he's been able to build a really cool spot over there. He was just in Liberia doing some really cool things. That got us the 28 acres in Huntersville that we're slowly building out on randomly in 21. Again, just talking out of everything I can. Like, oh, we have this distribution vision and I need a warehouse. Our county manager, Dina DiIorio, actually took my call right in April 2020 when the world was shutting down. And I'm like, I need land and money to build this distribution facility. I think we need to do this. And she's like, no, but keep me updated on what's going on. And she gave me an hour of her time and I gave her the whole story. Fast forward a year later, one of my strategic advisors is just sitting having lunch with a friend of hers and talking about us and our distribution vision. He's like, hey, my family has a warehouse that we're not doing anything with. And so Leah calls being like, hey, I think I found a distribution facility for you. I thought we were 6 months away from just going away. Everything was the COVID. We got some COVID funding in 2020, but it was all drying up. And I was like, I don't know if I want to see it, Leah, because I don't think I could handle it emotionally if it works out, because I got 3 or 4 months of payroll and that's about it. And she's like, no, we're going. And so we did. And Wayne Lee, a Chinese immigrant from the 70s, came to Charlotte, built a whole food, Chinese food distribution company, sold it right before COVID. Him and his daughter showing me around, and we sat back in one of the offices and he's, what do you think? And I'm like, Mr. Lee, I could not have dreamed a better layout, location, anything, but I have nothing. Like, I have nothing to offer you. And he's like, no, what do you think? What can you do? And I'm like, but Mr. Lee, I don't have anything. I have no money. I really don't even know what to say. And he's like, no, what are the next steps? And I'm like, how do I get to my no quickly so I can leave? This was April of 21, towards the end. And I said, I need you to take it off the market till June. Maybe I can muster up something to lock it up from June to the end of the year to see what even I could come up with. I would need a 25, 30-year lease at very generous terms and no guarantees on anything. And he looked at his daughter, looked at me like, yeah, let's do that.
Nice.
So then on my way home, I called Betsy Conway, who is my contact over at Lowe's Home Improvement. And I'm like, Betsy, I got a cool thing here. I need 30 grand. And asking for 30 grand on a hope and a dream is pretty much a non-starter. And give me a proposal. And so to her and Marcel, I think I had a commitment for them in about 2 weeks. We locked up the property. I had enough money to, I needed 30K to lock up the property for 6 months and then get me some master plan drawings. And so, what was funny, Neighboring Concepts, their architect, I had talked to Daryl, who owned Neighboring Concepts at the time, like a year and a half earlier, on like, if we were able to find this, what would we do? And he was so kind. We went to his office. He brought all of his senior people in. He walked me through all the different steps. And so once we got the money, we just knew what to do. And Kathy Morrison, who bought Neighboring Concepts from Daryl, immediately sat down, got master plan. I picked up the phone, called Dina, and said, I got a piece of property. She's, let's go. Talk to the county commissioners. We were the first major project of the ARPA funding approval in January of 22. And that really escalated us forward. That was the a little bit in there, but that's the oh my moments.
This tells me that you're doing the right thing.
Yeah.
When
Well, I
the
knew.
universe aligns, it's
Yeah.
like taking you all the way.
Greg, I think what people don't understand is how much you do beforehand that leads all the way up to it. Like, if I did not call Dina in April of 2020 and I called her out of the blue, it never would have happened. So letting her like talk to me, and she was so gracious with her time. Letting her understand the vision and concept and knowing it took me a year and then be able to come back. I think we had her sold and the commissioners were all on board. And West Charlotte is a very food insecure area. And so we're really excited, especially on this phase two, once we get it funded to putting a retail store, grocery store over there.
Nice. Congratulations. That's awesome.
Yeah, thank you.
Dina says such an incredible adventure, and she has a question.
Yeah.
She's wondered if the farmland under a trust or the
Not yet. That's the goal. Like I said, we're only 9 years old. We have a long way to go. Right now, both properties that we have are through a lease, but that is the goal. We take a lot of risks farming on leased land. Aldersgate is a little bit more sturdy in that regard, just because they're a nonprofit. And in order for them to keep their nonprofit status, they have to do projects like this. There's really nothing they can really do with that piece of property. So that one's very stable. The other farm is with a private landowner. They're immigrants from India with huge agricultural ties back into India.
Wow.
The farm happens to be in a very critical part of the Mountain Island Lake watershed, where Charlotte gets most of its water. So there's a lot of restriction, around development. So I think, Sri bought it as an investment, but once he heard about what we were doing, he's like, I want this to be a farm. And so,
Nice.
we've had long conversations about, I mean, we've already invested probably $300,000, to get to where we are now with it. But you got to take risks, Greg. But the goal is, once people can see this, we can get some more funding, eventually buy that piece of property from Sri. And we're talking, where we just talked to a developer that's building a mixed-use development over in Matthews. We need some budget in the HOA. Well, we can
Oh.
manage it, we can build it, we can make it a community amenity. So
Yeah, there's
they're
a name for those now.
brokering that into their deal. So I think we're on the cusp of Sarnby down in Georgia. There's a lot of different developments coming out that are agricultural center, but people need to see it. They need to see the economic model. And those are all the things that we're trying to build out.
Yeah. And there's a name for that now. It's called an agri-hood. And there's a huge one in Chandler, Arizona. Where I came from, and there's one Olivet Agri-hood is like 3 minutes from my house here. So they're starting it. They're starting it.
Yeah, we're trying to get architects to understand, go ahead and get the roofs reinforced, start putting all this in the planning up front, so we can integrate. Because I have a lot of opinions on vertical farming, but when we're looking in decades to come, we're going to need aquaponics, hydroponics, regenerative farming, backyard farms in order to exist.
Oh, yeah.
So it's one of those things where, again, none of this is rocket science. It's very hard to do, but political, social, everything is pushing us in this direction, whether we want to go to it or not. Inflation is terrible, but local produce and local food systems and the industrial are not that far apart anymore. The only thing that's very hard to do locally is really chicken, but pork and beef are really not that far apart from similar stuff into the grocery store. That's, I would envision, equal.
I got a question from Alicia, and then I have one more question for you. Alicia says, in the context of sustainable agriculture, land trusts play a pivotal role. They protect farmland from being developed for non-ag purposes and help ensure that this land remains available and affordable for farmers. And that's really what we're working on, right? Yeah.
I would work with another land trust if we have, let's say we're working with Farmer A, and we would be like, hey, let's get your farm into an easement. How do we raise some money to make that happen? If we, like the urban farms that we're working on, we're going to basically control them and have them underneath our umbrella. But the goal truly is to buy rural acreage and then sublease that out to farm new beginning farmers along their journey. Our goal with the land ownership is just to making sure that it is in agriculture, because I could be a farmer A, I sell it to somebody, the easements on that is great, and they just don't farm. But if I'm going to get the Compass Groups of the world to, all right, I like this regional food system, I need production. And it's also, especially with hemp and marijuana coming on, I want to make sure we have enough acreage out there that we have a little bit of control on. If you want to grow a little bit, sure, but we primary is kind of food production. So we don't immediately run cash crops as different policy shifts change. But that's our vision on kind of what we would do from a land situation. Recapping, if easements, we would work with an existing land trust to manage those easements. We want to get land into our Carolina Farm Trust,
Yeah.
making sure that we know we can have more control on how it's farmed, and but also just subleasing that at pretty much no cost to do an upcoming beginning farmers as they go down their journey.
Nice. Nice, nice. And so, how can people help? How can people help land trusts, and how can people help you?
If you want to learn more, Land Trust is a huge land trust that's here in the Charlotte region and out west. The Triangle Land Trust, there's lots of land trust all over the Carolinas. American Farm Land Trust is a great organization people can research. For us, really the biggest, we have a $17 million campaign we're rolling on right now to finish phase two of our distribution facility. And again, we are talking to some great foundations and some corporations and government to make that happen. But the biggest thing we're trying to tell the community is we don't have to wait for them to do it. We're not asking any one person to just one check make it happen. We can do a lot with a lot of people doing $30 or $40 or $100 a year. We have a vision, and it's just looking for those early adopters that see it and can help support it. So biggest thing is donate whatever you would like to on our homepage at CarolinaFarmTrust.org. For the folks that are local, we have our 90th museum in Charlotte. If people want to come, is May 16th is going to be really cool. We're actually creating our own kind of museum experience in partnership with another nonprofit called Art Pop that does a lot of work with amazing artists. So we're taking up over First Ward Park in Uptown Charlotte, and we got 20 chefs, we got 20 artists, and it's just going to be a really cool night.
Awesome. Awesome. Thank you so much for joining us tonight. I appreciate it.
Absolutely. I appreciate you guys having me.
Any final thoughts?
For me,
Yeah.
keep doing on. I love your elderberries. Hopefully, when you're growing them, we can say, Greg, we're coming to get 30, 40 pounds of
All right,
them.
let's do it.
All right. Take care.
Let's do it. Thank you.
All
Thank
right.
you all.
Bye-bye.
Appreciate it.
We hope you enjoyed today's episode of the Urban Farm Podcast. Remember to listen for tips, advice, and resources to help you on your journey with urban farming. You can find us on the web at urbanfarm.org or send us an email to podcast@urbanfarm.org. In the words of Vincent Van Gogh, great things are done by a series of small things brought together. Be encouraged that with each lesson learned and skill developed, you are one step closer in the direction of your dreams.